Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett and I'll be your host for this program. This is another special on the search for the little missing Florida girl, Haley Cummings. Joining me by phone from Gainesville, Florida, is news director and ace reporter for the Sky 97.3, TJ Hart. TJ, it is always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you, sir. The feeling is mutual. It's a good second home here with the Blog Talk Radio and with the Blogger News.
We are hoping to have Art Harris join us, but I know he has a scheduling conflict. He is conducting an interview, but hopefully he'll be joining us at some point this afternoon.
That'll be great.
Right. We will not be taking calls today. TJ, are you monitoring your Twitter, or are you Twitter?
I gave up on that thing.
You're Twittered out by the twits.
Yeah, well, I can't keep up with it. I'm just, you know, it's good for passing on information a little after the fact, but if I'm doing that while I'm doing something else, it's a little difficult to deal with. I still can't get used to the fact that my typewriter plugs in.
Right. we do have our chat room open, though, and anyone that does have an interesting question, feel free to pose it there. We will be monitoring it. The case. Seemingly, nothing much happened for 6 months. Today is actually the 7-month anniversary of Haley's disappearance.
Mm-hmm.
What really started to create havoc was a press release 3 weeks ago on Haley's sixth birthday. It was August the 17th. It was a short press release. It came from PCSO. And basically, the wheels have fallen off over the last 3 weeks. In a nutshell, TJ, bring us up to speed.
Well, what happened on the 17th was that the press release came out, and it basically said what the law enforcement had been up to and the fact that FDLE is now working with and has been working with the Putnam County Sheriff's Office with an FDLE officer right there inside the building, and they've been working as a team going over, you know, thousands, about 4,000, I guess, of tips and leads, and thus and so forth. And they also had mentioned some things that had taken place in the search, and that they welcomed other people to come in and search as long as they didn't overstep their legal authority, meaning Tim Miller with Texas Equisearch, and others who sought to help find the missing child. Now, buried in that, and also they ask you to be mindful of those who might not be, you know, actual reporters. Be careful who you talk to. But buried in that report was, oh, and by the way, if any member of the public has any information on the whereabouts of Misty Crosland Cummings the night of the disappearance of Haley Cummings from Satsuma, please come forward and let us know at the sheriff's office or through Crime Stoppers. That little innocuous line to some that were buried in the middle of that press release spoke volumes to me. I brought it up on the Nancy Grace show, and Nancy Grace was looking at me through the camera, and she says, wait a minute, TJ, why don't we just take out a big old lit-up billboard sign on 3rd Avenue and say that Misty wasn't there? I said, I think you're using the cartoon mallet a little bit, and for a fact, and she did, but it certainly put some pressure on Misty. Whether it was pressure that was applied or pressure that she sensed or felt applied, you know, here's a girl who's like, what are you looking at me for? Well, her stories had been inconsistent. That's been something that whenever law enforcement ever opened their mouth, and they've been tight-lipped on this from the get-go, that they would say that her stories are inconsistent. It's difficult to get the investigation going where it needs to go without a firm starting point in the investigation. So that's been hampering it all along. Okay, enter Texas Equisearch, which made their announcement that they're going to be in the community on the very same day at the request of Teresa Neves and the Cummings family. Mark Najame, Tim Miller, et al., they're all involved with the mix. Some days later, Tim Miller decides he's going to take Ronald and Misty to Orlando just to clear their heads. Okay. And then they're wondering about cell phones, this, that, and the other. And Ron was concerned that his cell phone was tapped. He didn't want anybody to know where he was. And, GPS and the phone and everything. He said, so they decided to leave their phones there. Misty tells the TV station that Tim Miller told them to leave their phones. And they decided on their own, and he issued them, those little, one-time-only phones, those little gas station phones that you can get. And, prepaid phones, I guess is what they're called. They work. They just, once you're out of time, you're out of time. And they go down to Orlando. They start talking. And then Misty inquires as to whether or not she can get a polygraph or something to get her name cleared. Well,
This is where it all starts.
This is where it all starts going into a spin.
Now, did she ask for the polygraph, or did Tim Miller ask that she take it?
This is where it's a he said, she said, and Tim Miller has not been a guy to have lied to me, but Misty's inconsistencies indicate that I might want to take Mr. Miller's word over hers, just based on historical performance. How's that for a reporter?
I think that's a very solid response.
So what happened here is that now you've got Misty in this scenario asking to get her name cleared. She's very tired of people, looking at her, putting her under the microscope. She's 17 years old. She's scared. She wants to get this drama over with, get on with her life. So at the request of Misty to Tim Miller, Tim's people are searchers. They go out there, they get dirty, they get wet, they get muddy, they find people. He's never been in this line of investigation. He's not an investigator per se. So he gets the best people he can find to assemble a team, and a very good one with T.J. Ward and his cadre of folks, and they do a polygraph, four questions. She fails miserably. According to Tim Miller, 95 to 99% failure. The last one was, do you know what happened to Haley or who might have her? It was 42%, which indicates that she might have some knowledge of who. But she didn't like the results of that, and she's upset. I don't want to take the test. A couple of days later, you got the family fighting. She better take that test, by God, So a couple of days later, they go back to Satsuma and they take the voice, the layered voice analysis or voice stress test, as it's been commonly known now. And in this situation, we're getting all kinds of information that she talked about her brothers and that she talked about different scenarios, and she also talked about allegations of abuse. She talked about possibly four people. It might have been a dream, but maybe there were four people that entered the home. But she couldn't remember if it was real or if it was a dream. So you got that floating around out there, plus a lot of redacted names on the verbatim report we at the press received from the voice stress analysis. So they asked relationship to Ronald, relationship to the child, this, that, the other, and so on and so forth. She did really bad on that one, too, unfortunately for her. So now, a few days later, after the results, a couple weeks later, after the results become known, she's fuming. She is going on TV. She's going on radio. She's all over the Internet. I was duped. I never wanted to do I was duped. I was forced into getting this. It was quid pro quo. There would be no search if I didn't do this. And a lot of people are just kind of raising their eyebrows. Oh, really? So it's up to It's up to the individual who consumes the news whether or not they wish to believe what she said. Right. So we get there at that point. Go ahead, sir. You've got another question.
Winding forward to more recent events,
yes.
The vacation that a couple of Florida law enforcement folks took in Massachusetts, was that spurred on by Misty's comments or something else?
Actually, it appears at this point, and I'm not getting confirmation from law enforcement, but only from sources close, that there was most of it had to do with some of her telephone calls or alleged telephone calls to her brother Tommy Crosland and his wife Chelsea, who now live in Massachusetts, but were living just pretty much around the block and around the bend at the Hermit's Cove in that area of Satsuma at the time of the disappearance of the child. Now, other sources are saying that it had to do with some of the comments that she made during hypnosis. Tim Miller's not confirmed that with me, and, you know, that was his group. He says, no, she actually talked very highly of Timmy and very, very glowingly of him. So he's kind of puzzled as to what might have drawn authorities up there. But it was not in relation to a possible or unconfirmed, a possible sighting of the child at a Walmart in Abington, Massachusetts. I've got to tell you that I've not seen any pictures, and I've been up Walmart's backside with a microscope for days, and they say that they always help police in this matter, but you're going to have to go through police if you wish to get anything that we might or might not have turned over to them, which is, you know, the limits their exposure for lawsuits, and that's understandable. So, you know, they're not bad people because they wouldn't turn over pictures to a reporter. They're just being careful. I do want to stress that. I'm just disappointed that I didn't get complete my mission. Now, law enforcement up there, it's a pass around the buck. You talk to the state police, and I talked to Lieutenant Wilson in Massachusetts. He said, yes, two people were questioned in Cape Cod, South Yarmouth, at the police barracks. They were there for off and on for about 14 hours. But if you want anything else, guess what? You're going to have to go to Putnam County to get any details, because that's all I can tell you is that two people were questioned. Okay, what about the sighting of a child? Go to Putnam County. Okay, you go to Putnam County, you get no answer. We were also told to go to the state's attorney's office. State's attorney's office was, let's just say, less friendly. At least Lieutenant Wilson was cordial. Mr. O'Keefe at the state's attorney's office, you know, for Cape and Islands, just said, you're going to have to go to the investigative authority. We're not going to answer any questions. Okay, gotcha. So back to Putnam County we go, and you know, without any chowder, and sorry, I was wrong, but that's what happened. Putnam County, of course, is not answering. Now, Teresa Neves told our staff at CNN Headline News, Marlena Shivo, that she had received word, and she didn't say from whom, that the picture was that of a girl matching Haley's description being pushed in a shopping cart by an adult, but it was not clear to see if the adult was male or female. And, of course, you know, from the odd angles that you get on surveillance cameras, you know, your guess is as good as mine sometimes how people dress as to whether or not you can determine gender. So that's what we've got so far there. But it appears that it might have been a combination of telephone calls to Timmy and Chelsea and perhaps something that may have been stated during some of the questioning during the voice stress analysis.
Well, I did notice. In fact, you were on the show. The Walmart sighting got Nancy Grace with her knickers in a knot. I mean, she was all over that.
Yeah, and quite honestly, I was more concerned about the line of questioning, the who, what, when, where, how, this, that, the other. But, you know, that's always up to the host. She was, and I know why, because there. Come on, everyone you talk to Teresa Neves, she's just ready to, you know, jump out of her skin, but it's guarded optimism. Annette Sykes smiling from ear to ear on the First Coast News on TV, very optimistic but yet guarded. Ron, I spoke with his lawyer Terry Shoemaker while I was on the set of Nancy Grace just the other night, and he said, my God, he said the guy only slept for like 45 minutes. He's like, oh, my God, you know, what's the news, what's the latest? And, of course, we're not hearing anything more about this alleged sighting. So, yeah, there was a great deal of adrenaline and a great deal of excitement and a great deal of guarded optimism over that sighting, and that's understandable. But we've had a lot of these sightings before, and I got to tell you, I get just as excited as anybody else. Not nearly as excited as the family, of course, and with all due reason, that's their family. But just as a person who's been observing this, you want it to be the child, you want it to be a live child, and you want the child to come home. So you do kind of go through the emotional roller coaster.
The polygraph that Misty failed miserably. Do we know if Tim Miller extended the same polygraph offer to Ron?
That I cannot confirm, but I do know that Misty's father strongly suggested that in a piece that we fired off to everyone. Let's see, what was it? About a week ago, I guess, a telephone message that he left on Tim Miller's Codaphone, his answering machine, saying, "Hey, you know, I heard Ron say that if he had $35,000, you know, he'd get that kid back. Got witnesses. And by the way, he said you might want to put Ron under hypnosis." And so that's where that whole notion came from.
Okay, now I know that Ron has taken a poly. In fact, I believe it was an FBI administered poly.
Mm-hmm.
And although, you know, no one is saying what the official results are, I would find it hard to believe that if he failed it miserably, they wouldn't be all over his case.
Yeah, if he failed it miserably, you'd be seeing a completely different story. I mean, that's all there is to it. You'd be seeing a completely different story. But no one really knows the results of that except for law enforcement, to my knowledge, because they just don't let that stuff go. They don't like people having that. But however, if you told a whopper and it led to this, that, or the other, I'm very certain that they would be keeping a close tab on you, and they would probably put you at the top of the list as opposed to the bottom of the list of people of suspect.
The top of the list, bottom of the list. I know that there's probably at least one listener, right, that has not heard this story. I believe it really has its beginnings in that PCSO or PSCO press release on the 17th that mm-hmm. said that Ronald Cummings was not considered a suspect, or words to those effect.
Mm-hmm.
And it was.
It said that he and Crystal were not suspects.
Right, and it was Mr. Shoemaker that actually changed that story.
Got it.
Lightly.
God, I dropped my jaw. I mean, we're sitting there. My left elbow is touching his right elbow. We're that close on the set. And he's a nice guy. I'll tell you this right now. I mean, he's a heck of a nice guy. But I found that quite odd for him to be as drop dead matter of fact as he was. And that's a good thing, I guess, because that's, you know, in this case, you don't get too many straight stories. He flat out said, no, Ron has not been cleared. We've heard other folks say that from time to time, and even I was told that both were pretty much were cleared. And then that rescinded back to, again, no longer a suspect a couple of hours later, okay? So this tells you just how fluid this all is and who you ask and when you ask them. He said, "No, Ron's not. Ron's just not the top. He's the last suspect." He said, "Other than having a camera on you 24 hours a day, I can pretty much say that you're the last person we'd suspect in this." So As close to cleared as you can get, but still, you're not cleared. Nobody is, to be quite honest with you, because things change. New information pops up, and this is not solved, and you won't have anybody cleared until it's solved. And that's
right.
How he explained it to me after we got off the air, too. I was like, oh, okay.
But I found it an interesting comment. One wonders why he didn't just climb on the press release and say, yep, my client's free and clear. Yeah.
Well, he also backed up on the timeline thing, too. And as fluid as that is, a lot of things came into play seemingly to insulate Ron's timeline. And you've got folks close, sources very close to the investigation, saying that Ron was at work at from 4 in the after his work hours that day, not every day. His work hours that day were 4 p.m. to 3 a.m., which I questioned all up and down, and I was told that there was a barge, and he's a crane operator, and, things had to get done, so he's there at PDM taking care of business until approximately 3 a.m., so his ending time is pretty solid. However, his normal work shift starts at 5. Sources close to the investigation say we put him there at approximately 4 p.m., 4 to 4:15. Well, Ron's lawyer says, well, normally he's there 45 minutes to a half hour before his work shift at 5. Then he said, but that day it was probably closer to 4:30 than 4:15. So he backed it up again. So now you got anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes that are unaccounted for. And then you have the, Ron saying that he picked up his child at the bus. Art Harris now has audio and video of witnesses who said, no, Misty picked her up from the bus that day. So, again, it's who you ask and when you ask them and what kind of answer you're going to get. Everything is very, very fluid. Everything is so agenda-driven in this. And I just read his article a little bit ago, Simon, I covered Illinois politics, which is about the sleaziest place on earth. I mean, that and Louisiana, pretty much a tie, okay? When it comes to the state house, I mean, you have to take a shower when you walk out of there because of the slime. But I found it easier to navigate that snake pit than I did ever in the little tiny town of Satsuma, Florida.
That's a pretty
ugly. I witnessed one governor going to prison in Illinois. Another one is not that far away from going too, and all kinds of legislators get their hands slapped or put in jail or this, that, or the other for just really bad behavior. Educated people who should know better, but. I'm seeing the bamboozle in Putnam County like nobody's business. And I will tell you, virtually every reporter who has reported on this to any length has been burned, been seriously burned. That's why you only have, basically Art and me reporting on it. You do have Channel 12 when there's a big story. You have Fox 35 when there's a big story. You have Jax 4 when there's a big story. But they're not in there every day, and there's a damn good reason for it. Just a lot of liability and just a lot of stuff.
I've come to the conclusion that the Haley Cummings case is very much like the curse of the mummy. Get involved in it, expect trouble.
Yeah.
Because trouble will be heading your way, and I'm not quite sure of the reason why.
I'm not either. I'm bamboozled, and I'll say that again because I think that's pretty much the way it is. You get so frustrated, you get so strung out. You're starting to make some headway here, and then whoops, everything starts to change, and everybody wants to change the storyline. Everybody wants to change the narrative. Everybody has an agenda in this, and it seems like the last part of the agenda is, oh, by the way, there's a missing child.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, everybody seems to lose focus of that. It's like picking sides picking sides. And you know, I'm sorry. I was raised in the Midwest. I'm not saying is, you know, paragon of virtue, but, you know, there's very little bull roar outside of politics, okay? The people there, you know, they wake up in the morning, they go to work, they put in a hard day, they come home. You know, what you see is what you get. Not a whole lot of put on, not a whole lot of shenanigans, not a whole lot of, you know, this, that, or the other games. And, you know, it's difficult enough just to get through the day and make it to the goal line, which is to come home at night and enjoy your family. And if that sounds a little too Rockwellian for some folks, tough, that's just the way it is. But you go over there, it's like, what in the hell is this? Stephen King in his wildest dreams couldn't put together a town like this, and it's so little.
I've heard the same sentiments so many times from so many other people that, you know, I've definitely crossed Satsuma off my list of vacation spots.
You know, Palatka is, you know, and I'm not sitting there, I'm not writing it. Folks of Satsuma, that is not directed toward you. It's directed toward the situation that surrounds this incident, okay? Because by and large, you know, the folks of Satsuma are very nice, well-intended people. They go to work every day. They bust it, and they come back home, and they try to live life in what was a quiet little community and home of a very unique orange, which bears its name, the Satsuma Orange. And, you know, you're right there in probably one of the most beautiful spots in the world, right next to the St. John's River, and just a little bit to the east, you got the Atlantic Ocean. You know, what's not to like about the lush green, beautiful surroundings that you have? You know, Palatka is a beautiful town, too. It's got a nice, everyday, all-American look to it, except for it's got this river as big as the Mississippi rolling right to the east of it, and a big bridge. And there's a lot of good things to say about Palatka as well. But this soap opera on top of a very evil kidnapping of a child is just deranged.
I'm still a firm believer that we do have all of the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle. It's just we haven't arranged them in the correct order. And, you know, you and I are not privy to what the police have, you know, the various agencies, but I do believe we're paralleling the police. You know,
we're getting close.
Yeah. Well, we're converging even,
yes.
rather than being parallel. The key, at least in my simplistic mind, is the timeline of what actually happened on the evening of February the 10th.
Bingo, sir. You're right where the officers are. Just what did happen? I flipped out the reporter's notes the other day, and I think I heard you all the way from your home base scratching your head.
Yeah, that's about it.
Because you've got Ronald somehow getting to work, whether he picked up or did not pick up his daughter at the bus stop. He's at work at closer to 4:30 than 4:15, according to his lawyer, and so on and so forth. It's verified through his employer, and Ellie has accepted that as well, that he was there for his entire shift. Okay? Ron has an argument over the telephone with Misty at 8:30 that night via telephone, not at the trailer. Nowhere, no how, no way. She turns her phone off, or the phone goes off for most of the night, till about 3:15, somewhere in that area. He tries to text, he tries to call, he doesn't get any response. Finally, just to hell with it, you know. And then you get the added agitation of having to stay at work, 3 hours later to, you know, unload the barge. I find out now that you can buy alcohol pretty much 24/7 in Putnam County in certain places. So when he bought that beer and was caught on the surveillance, his image was captured there, no clerk got in trouble. That was something I had to double check with some ordinances there. He bought beer, bought peanuts, bought cigarettes. Hell, looked like he was going to a ball game. You know?
Okay.
Go ahead, because I know I've skipped over something and it's bugging you. Go ahead.
Okay. Several of the armchair quarterbacks have been calling BS on the fact that he drove past the turning to go home to find out, you know, what was going on with Misty, and barreled on to the store instead. Yeah, and why would...
Yeah, it's about a mile and a half away from the turnoff there to River Villas, maybe a little bit more. And it's a sit-go station there on the west side of the road on 17. And the thing is, you know, sometimes if you're in an argument with somebody, sometimes you got a head full of steam and you want to get home and, you know, either get it resolved or argue some more, depending on what your bend is that day. Or you're already pissed off because you had to work 3 hours extra and you just said, ah, hell with it, you know. I'm going to grab me a beer and some peanuts and then deal with it when I get home. I mean, we don't know. We don't know what was in the guy's head. We don't know. I mean, Simon, I can't think for you. I can't think for your emotions. I can barely think for mine. So
No. My question is, did the store he went to...
Yeah, it's about a mile and a half past his turnoff.
Oh, okay. All right.
Maybe two, yeah. It's around the corner, you know, a little bend in the road, and then it's off to the right-hand side. You go past Meemaw's for the sweet tea, and then you get to the sit-go station.
I have someone in the chat room. I knew this question was going to come up.
Is it the same person who texted me a few seconds ago?
Could very well be. Is Haley in Massachusetts?
We don't know. There was a unconfirmed sighting. We don't know. And I've got to tell you that if she is... they're keeping her pretty well under wraps.
Exactly. That's my thoughts as well. Another interesting...
Somebody's got a hell of a surprise coming. That's what I, you know, and that would be all of us.
Right. Another interesting coincidence. I don't know if it's a coincidence or if it's something deeper. In the police car-to-car chatter tape that was released.
I want to tell you that that's not time-stamped. The person who did the transcribing forgot to time-stamp that. So instead of 3:27, that was probably closer to 3:40 when those radio transmissions began.
Okay, here's my question, and it really has nothing to do with time-stamping.
Okay.
A responding car states that he's at 116 Tyler.
Yeah.
But
that's the Crosland residence.
Right, yes it is. But it's not clear why he was there. Do you have any ideas?
No. You know, there's a couple of theories. I mean, I just don't have that. That's part of the stuff that we got the audio transmissions and we got the transcriptions. You know, so I posted the audio first, then the transcribe, and then the transcribe and audio. All I can think of is that maybe this is where it lies with the phone call that Misty might have made. You know, check the, you know, what the hell, you know, what do I do, you know. Calling a family member first before calling police when Ron got home.
Could that just possibly...
I don't know. I can't think of I can't think for her what was going through her mind or what was going on. But the houses geographically are not that far apart.
Right, because in the transcription, you know, he does say, "Oh, I'm only a couple of blocks away."
Yeah, it's up and around to the right, up and around to the left, and then quickly to the right on the dirt road. Yeah.
There's also some scuttlebutt going around that her phone transmissions prior to it being shut off at 8:30, that there were some calls to her brother Timmy. Do you have any idea if that's factual?
That is one of the things that we're trying to ferret out. We don't have the phone records released from both. Only going by what attorneys have told us. And LE has not made those phone records public yet. So you have to go around the back door and see if somebody's got a little something to share for you. And right now, that back door at LE is stone cold and locked, and you ain't getting in for nothing. So,
I have to agree with you on that one.
And I know why they're being very quiet. And you got to give them their due. This is getting close to a resolution, and they do not want this case compromised. They do not want to run the risk, if this child is still alive, to risk any kind of harm coming to this child. Or if the child is no longer with us, God forbid, they don't want to compromise a prosecution that's going to send the guilty away for the longest amount of time possible. And maybe a little bit of both.
And I sincerely hope that they are getting close to a resolution. But, you know, they've never been particularly friends of the press. For some reason, you know, a few people seem to have ticked off Putnam County. And
I did.
And you did?
Well, yeah.
Well, I'm not sure you ticked them off more. You know, they were ticked off by some other people, and, you know.
I just reported on it.
Right. You just became a, you know.
I was close. I happened to be geographically close. I got rocked pretty hard. I got to say, it was done professionally, though, and I will respect it for that. It was very professionally done, but, you know, I got the Sunday lecture, and from time to time, I still get the Sunday lecture, you know. And the thing is, it's not necessarily that you're wrong. It's not necessarily that you're poking in the right or wrong places. It's just that, you know, you're poking. I get Sunday lectures. I do.
Yeah, we've talked about this, and I'm not sure we really want to elucidate on it on air, do we?
No.
But yeah, TJ does get verbally beaten on occasion.
Like I said, it's not because the information is right and not because the information is wrong. It's where did you get that information?
Right. Don't you ever say that again.
Yeah, it's like, they just want to know where are you getting that? You know, and it's rather pointed. So,
I got a question.
They do. I tell you what, I don't care where I've been since 1975. That place is tight. You don't make friends on the inside. That is tight.
Right. I got another question coming in from the chat room, and I'm not sure I understand it, but it's. What about the loud vehicle that came in the night Haley went missing?
I do know of one that came in the night before. I've heard about that, but I've not pursued that end in this coverage. I really have not pursued that end on it. But you know, that story is out there.
Mm. There are lots of stories out there.
Yes, there are.
Okay, let's move on to what I know is one of your favorite subjects.
We're not talking about the door?
No, we've passed on from the door. Although I can queue up CCR if you...
That's okay, that's all right.
If you really need it. No, Dirty Laundry.
Oh, the other song, Don Henley, yeah. Yeah, reports indicate... And also, voice sound bites from the players involved indicate that there was dirty laundry in the dryer, next to that back door where the screen door was propped open, and the big door, which of course moves inward. There's always stated to be dirty clothes in that laundry area. And of course, you know, if you got a family and you got little kids, you're washing clothes. It's all you do is wash clothes. You're either cooking or you're cleaning. You know, I raised five, so I know what the hell to expect in a laundry room. But you got to ask yourself a series of questions. why was it put there? Was it to clear the pathway of the door? And if so, why? Was it to bring something in earlier in the day, late at night? Take something out early in the day, late at night? Was it put there by Misty? Was it put there by somebody else? And if so, who? And with those clothes being out of the way of the door, at least some of them, it sure made that door easier to open and easier to navigate and easier to get in and out of, instead of having dirty clothes all propped up against it or reducing the space at which you could open that door.
Okay.
So that's been bugging me, and I don't know why. I obsess over sometimes some of the little details, and it just makes me nuts.
It's the little details that tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
That's been proven time and time again. But there were dirty clothes in the dryer, I believe.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Why? How did they get there? Who put them there? And why did they put them there? And if they put them there, they undoubtedly did that either by mistake, or they did that to clear out the pathway because the dryer is right next to that back door where Haley was allegedly taken. And if you got to get them out of the way, you got a small area to do it. Why not put them there where they can be contained instead of all over the place?
Okay. Now, one of the,
like trash on the floor or in the basket,
Right. But, I mean, one of the many varying stories involves doing laundry.
Uh-huh.
I mean, how can you be doing or have done laundry if the clothes in the dryer are dirty?
And you had no soap.
And you had no soap.
See, this is why I don't know why, but a friend of mine kept bringing this up to me, and God bless her, she's just been an ace. She has these instincts like a police investigator, and I swear to God, she was Holmes in a previous life. But this young lady has been working some of these little things every now and then, and sometimes I'm like going, turn your brain off for 10 minutes, please. And then this one comes out, and I'm like going, turn that brain on again, thank you. And that's where all of that is coming from. We've been exchanging all kinds of telephone calls and correspondence on this, comparing thoughts and theories on this as well. I got to say, I'm dealing with a very sharp person who has a very keen sense of what's going on here.
And
that's where this is all going.
There was also a story about washing a blanket, I believe.
That smelled like pee.
Right. I mean, I'm not a trained law enforcement officer,
mm-hmm.
but... suddenly I'm going, nah, there's some things here that just don't add up. And it all goes back to, why would you have dirty laundry in the dryer?
Yeah. That's another one of the big inconsistencies. Believe it or not, law enforcement has their hands full since day one. Can't get out of the gate some days because of all this stuff. Whether it means anything or not, it's there.
Right.
And you have to see it through to its end. And if it's a dead end, it's a dead end. But everything has to be pursued. That's why they're all over the place from the starting point, going in five or six different directions with the past several months. What the hell does this mean? It doesn't mean anything at all. Is this significant? Is this insignificant? What matters? What doesn't matter? And this is where, people got frustrated with LE saying, well, boy, it just seems like they're spinning their wheels. No, they're doing their due diligence with very little to go on.
Right.
And if it sounds like I'm shaking my pom-poms for them, it's not. It's because I understand, and believe me, I share in their frustration with this, all these inconsistencies from the get-go.
It's only if you start delving that you start to see all of these problems. This, if it was planned, was badly planned.
And you know what? You can follow a good plan because it's logical and it makes sense. You can't always follow a bad plan when you try to reverse engineer that bad plan because you have no idea. None of it makes sense.
Right. Okay, there's another aspect that has me shaking my head, you know, and that's the bed. Was it made? Had it been slept in?
Good question. According to Tim Miller, when Ron spoke to him, Ron said that bed was made. Nobody had slept in it. And then you ask law enforcement, they said, they're not going to tell you whether the bed was made or not made. They will tell you, yes, that is indeed what Ron told us. Because they're not going to tell you if it was or if it wasn't, because that is part of an investigation. And you can't let ongoing information about an ongoing investigation out. All they could confirm is that's what he said
right
that night.
Yeah.
So I want everybody to know, if it sounds like I'm splitting hairs, I'm repeating the hair splitting I got.
Oh, and the hair splitting is a very important aspect.
Yeah.
Until law enforcement actually say, yes, this is what we found, we just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, likewise, we don't know what the polygraph test showed when they spoke to Ronald and Misty. I mean, both of them submitted to, I believe it was an FBI polygrapher. And
I believe it was, and I also believe it was there was one more locally. I can't remember if it was FDLE or Putnam County, but they've had at least one, and in some cases two or three, depending on the person involved. So yeah.
But I don't see an enormous amount of heat being put on Ron, you know, unless.
And that seems to frustrate. And you know what? That seems to frustrate a lot of people. I think people are reading Ronald's body language, and they're picking up a vibe, and it's a vibe that they don't particularly care for this guy. And you know, that's I guess understandable, because we are humans. We pick up vibes. We pick up intuitions or things that either mark elements of trust or distrust. And there seem to be a lot of people out there who are of the mind that this is not a man who's being truthful. This is a man who's being a little evasive and a little squirrely. And to back that up, I was on Nancy Grace's show with him, and when they were asking about this, that, and the other, and Misty's stories, and he would say, well, I don't know anything about the polygrapher. And he said it very well, I might add, that... I'm waiting for further evidence. I just want to keep Haley's face out there on television. And when we went to the break, Nancy was giving them a little bit of a direction and pep talk. Of course, I had been called by my friend, Cobra, on another line, so I didn't hear the instructions. I give Cobra all kinds of hell because, you know, one, he's there, and two, my day ain't complete unless I did. But I was not able to hear the instructions that Miss Grace was trying to give them, as far as would you please try to answer a direct. We're trying to help you here, so if you would please try to answer a direct question with a direct answer, it would be most helpful. And they went back to him again, and they deferred it back to keep Haley's picture and stuff out there. And she got agitated again, and people see that as evasive or distrustful or not truthful. I know that particularly the women who are following this story see this man as a guy who likes young girls, and to them that's a big red flag, and that's a sign of danger, or perhaps maybe the marking in their mind of someone who could be possibly, and I'm not attributing these traits because I'm only reporting what I know, but from what people who hold this mindset tell me, they perceive some of his actions, some of his history, as maybe a fellow who might be of a controlling behavior toward young ladies. And they're very offended by that. And very, they get their backs arched up pretty good, and they see red. when they see that. So, you know, not being a lady, not knowing what these ladies know, I just kind of have to take their word for it that this is the way they feel, and you can't always explain emotions, but a lot of the knee-jerk emotions from probably about 80% of the ladies who are following the case indicate that there's a great deal of distrust or just a total non-belief of anything that Mr. Cummings is saying. And therefore, whenever law enforcement backs up his, or not law, yeah, law enforcement or his work back up his whereabouts that night, it really seems to get their dander up, and they really are skeptical and remain so. And I tell you what, during this whole case, I encourage everybody to be skeptical of everything. Be skeptical of me, because I might not be getting the information from someone who's being truthful. And I've been burned by people who have been truthful up to a point to which then they turn, and then the information goes from information to agenda. And then, of course, that person is disposed of and never used professionally ever again. Disposed of, not meaning dead, but I mean, you get it. You're done. You're not trustworthy. So, you know, like I said, it's just a mess.
Okay, I've got another.
I talked in a circle. I apologize.
That's fine. But that's why we have these shows. But I do have a question coming in, and there is no way you can answer it, because we've already broached the subject, but I will ask it again.
Sure.
Why did Misty call her brother that night, and when did she call him?
Boy, that's the million-dollar question today.
It is.
That is. I mean, you can only you know, hypothesize. The million-dollar question.
I mean, the phone records have not been released, and
but some information is being released in dribs and drabs, if, you know, through attorneys and things. That's where
right.
We're getting this.
I mean, in
case anybody wanted to know,
I would love to know why she called her brother, and I'd love to know when she called her brother.
Yeah, everybody does. Believe me, everybody does. And why do you think that they went up to Massachusetts to talk to him?
Right.
This is the brother she called.
Now,
that's why they were up there. They weren't up there for a weekend in New England, Barry Manilow.
Right. Now, no. The way I look at it, I'm going back to the timeline.
Sure.
We're pretty certain that she turned her phone off at 8:30.
After the argument, yeah, she didn't want to hear any noise.
All right, so it had
to, you know, let's face it, we've all done that. It's like, I don't want to talk to anybody anymore.
Right. But I mean, when did she turn it back on?
Apparently right around 3.
Right. Okay,
but we're getting the vagaries. We're only getting the vagaries. We're not getting the accurate as this comes out in dribs and drabs.
Right. I mean, there's stories floating around, albeit from unreliable sources, that she was on the phone at something like 2 or 2:15 a.m.
Could have been. For all we actually factually have concrete proof. That could very well have happened.
Wow. I'm sure that law enforcement at some point will be listening to this show. I mean, boy, we would love to know the answers to these questions.
Without compromising the case.
Right. I think that's the other thing that bothers me in this case. I believe that certain aspects of law enforcement are viewing the press as being the bad guys, you know, forcing them into positions that they don't want to be forced into. I, I, I can only speak for myself, but I think I speak for you as well.
Mm-hmm.
We're not that. You know, all we want is some justice. We want some resolution to what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, they very much understand that. It's a bit of a two-way street. When they need us, they call us. And, you know, they know that the press is a very useful tool. But you also, if you don't say anything, you don't have to retract anything. Does that make any sense?
Oh, yes, it certainly does.
Yeah, so the flow of information is being very carefully managed. From their perspective, that works very well for them. For reporters, well, that can be frustrating. For people who are following this case, that can be frustrating too. But what I need to remind everybody is that this is a very real little girl who is missing, and this is not a reality TV show.
Right. Unfortunately,
I can't express that enough.
Unfortunately, to many people, this is a reality TV show.
Yeah, they've reduced it now because they see it on TV and they hear it on the radio and they read it on the blogs that it's you know, kind of like playing Survivor. I mean, look at the way that folks behave who follow this closely. It's almost like they build up alliances and like-minded people, and this is what we believe, and if you don't believe, you can go to hell. And it gets all nasty, and it's about a little girl who's missing, not about people joining hate clubs. And when I think of that, I got to think, so how long has it been since you've been in eighth grade? You know, didn't you kind of get over that at the lunchroom? Halfway through your 14th year of life, but that's just me.
I mean, pretty much. The few of us that have stuck with the story have had to live with the eighth graders. I mean, every day.
We don't like you anymore. We just decided that we're going to stick with our version of the truth, and that's it, and that says us, and we're going to be over here, and you can't join us anymore. And it's like, who in the, what in the hell? There's a girl missing. There's a very, very beautiful child missing, and it's us and them, and you and them and us and them and them and us. And I'm sorry to reduce it to that, folks, but I'm just an old man, and I'm just an observer. And having raised five kids and three of them girls, I don't know. I don't know what I'm seeing.
One of the...
there we go. Now I'm going to be a misogynist here.
We'll get beaten senseless in.
I don't care. I you get to a certain age, you don't care.
Actually, I wanted to ask a serious question.
You're not there yet, are you, Simon?
But before I do, is there any truth in the rumor that on your last video escapade with Nancy Grace, you were asked to change the tie?
No. Yes, I was. I was, because what happened was I am not a slave to fashion, as you know. But
you didn't borrow the tie from Cobra, did you?
No, sir. No, sir. I did not. But what happened is that the tie, because of its pattern and design, the stripes, it had a tendency to dance on the screen. And I'm sitting there going, I wore this when I did television a long time ago, and I guess what they were trying to tell me is times have changed, styles have changed, and they just said, that's really kind of aggravating the camera, and to which I should have just said, if you'd like for me to take it off, I'd be more than happy to do it. I am not a tie kind of guy anymore. So, I came out looking like, some weightlifter. With that thing strapped on my neck, what the hell. Next time I'm not doing a tie.
So, to all those armchair quarterbacks, he did not get his tie from Cobra.
No, I did not. I actually got it from a female co-anchor of mine when we were doing television at an NBC station in Illinois, and she gave that to me as a Christmas gift.
All right.
Anita Roman.
back to the serious stuff for a moment. Law enforcement, while they've been very tight-lipped, I do believe are closer to the truth than they're telling us.
Oh, I believe so.
Right. And that they have been consistent in absolutely one aspect. They do not believe in the stranger abduction theory.
Hmm. Well, that only leaves a handful of people.
Well, okay. We have Misty, who knows more than she's saying.
Mm-hmm.
And no one's pointing the finger directly at her. They're just saying, Misty, you know, come tell us what you know.
Mm-hmm.
We have the biological mother, Crystal.
Who's also at the bottom of the suspect list.
Right. Crystal had 12,000 reasons to intervene, to do something.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't see that as viable. You know, I don't mean this in a rude fashion. I don't think she's capable of hatching the plan. Never mind carrying.
Very well put. I don't think she is. I don't think she would be able to put together such an intricate plan. I'm with you.
And you know that only leaves one person, and you know as Sherlock Holmes would say, you know after you've investigated every other option, you know what you've got left is the truth. That leaves Ron.
It also leaves a house full of Crosland's just down the street, too.
That very well could be.
And did you know all of them are now said to be fixing to move to Massachusetts with Timmy in that area? They had the yard sale going on. I know Lindsay and Tommy were on the news the other day, and Lindsay, we got some sound with her. They're getting ready to go. They're tired of all of this bull roar. They don't think it's safe there. They don't like the rumors going around about Misty and stuff like that. But by the way, this is a family that's famous for throwing their kin under the bus. Let's see. Now, today, Misty was in court yesterday. She got a restraining order, a permanent restraining order against Hank Crosland Jr., her brother. He'd been making some threats. He was the one that was involved in that fight out there in the front yard. She says, look, the guy's crazy. He's got guns. He's saying all kinds of crazy crap. I don't want him around. I think he's dangerous. That happened just last night, or just late in the afternoon yesterday.
Actually, I read something, I'm not sure it was reliable. It was all about Ratgate.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's part of it too, but this is actually coming from some pretty well-known news sources. This is Jax 4 and First Coast News in the Jacksonville area, which are a little bit closer than where I am. But they both had that story. My stringer had that there was going to be a restraining order, but not to the extent that you know they covered it, and you got to give them their due.
The version I read, and I honestly can't remember the source, said that Misty or Ron admitted that they did indeed put the rat in the mailbox. Have you heard that one?
Not yet.
I'm sure you will.
Give it time. The day is young, my friend.
Oh, yeah. Pretty much our hour is up. In fact, we've run way over as always. TJ, do you have any parting thoughts for us?
Just get this thing resolved and bring the baby home.
You know,
I'm tired. And the families are tired. You know, I don't factor into this at all. So hell with me. But the families are tired. Those who love her are tired. They're heartbroken. Their emotions are shot. The whole United States seems to feel for this child. So I know how you're feeling out there because I'm one of you. Although we've never, none of us who read about her or watch about her on TV have ever met this child. Somehow we feel some kind of a closeness for her, and I think we're all together in just wishing for a very, very positive resolution at this end.
And I think I'll make this, you know, one more plea. If you know something, call someone. You don't have to call me. You don't have to call TJ. In fact, it's probably better if you don't.
Yeah, you're probably better if you didn't.
But, you know, there's a million agencies that would love to hear from you. If you've got that little speck of gold dust, you may not even realize that it's gold dust, but it might be the key to solving this whole case. Crime Stoppers. Do you know their number offhand, TJ?
I don't have it in front of me, but just go to the Putnam County Sheriff .org or just Google the Putnam County Sheriff's Office in Florida, and it's right there.
Yeah. TJ, I really want to thank you for taking an hour plus to talk to me today. I'm sure this is not what you're usually employed to do.
No, but that's okay. It's got to be done, I think. I think that trying to get the information out there the best we possibly can is just key. I'm a little disappointed that Arthur couldn't join us. I hope he can sometime.
Maybe we will do another show, one that fits his schedule a little better. Because I do know that he has a lot of knowledge about the timeline.
Yes, but he was there with a video camera during times where, you know, I just couldn't physically be there all the time with the type of what I have to do for my living. This story is not my living, and I think I've told everybody that I don't get a dime out of this, nor am I seeking a dime out of this. So I do my full-time job, and after about 3 or 4 in the afternoon, I strap on the old Haley hat and go to work on it. And do that to all hours of the night. And phone calls come in during my regular work hours. I deal with that, and I follow leads and cover it as a local news story. I only cover it to the degree that I cover it with you and with CNN on my own hours. So Art, of course, was blessed with the opportunity to be there photographing and recording people. And he really, really, you know, I got to tell you, folks, he didn't get 2 Emmys for being a silly, okay? Art's the real deal, and he and I don't have any kind of competition. We were on 2 different levels. He's national. I'm a local guy. I got my lot in life, and I'm very thankful for it. He's earned everything that he's got. This guy has banked away a lot of information, and I think he's got more information than he actually knows that he has. And he's going to comb through those notes, and I guarantee you that Art probably has one of those nuggets that's going to pay off here before too long. So I'm going to give my brother his due.
You know, I've found it fascinating for the last several months. There's you, there's Art, there's myself. We're not in competition. You know,
no.
We tend to share a lot. You know, it's not who can get to press first. It's, you know, what can we do to actually move this case forward?
That's it.
That's it.
That is absolutely it.
And I'm going to use that to sign off this afternoon. TJ, thank you so much for talking to me.
All right, thank you, sir.
This is Simon Barrett for Blogger News Network, www.bloggernews.net, wishing everyone a great day, and hopefully the next time we have a program about Haley Cummings, it will be a good story. we will have found the little girl. Till then, this is Simon saying goodbye.